your need-to-know cultural snapshot of Wisconsin and beyond. This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee, a deep dive into all things intriguing, riveting, and entertaining. Now, here's your host, Sandy Max.
Thank you for joining me for this special episode of What's on Tap, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee, where we're going to have fun previewing the summer blockbuster film by Academy Award winner Christopher Nolan, directing The Odyssey. And this is an ambitious follow-up to his award-winning film, Oppenheimer. So it is opening this weekend. And Marquette University English professor, Dr. Leah Culligan-Flack, she's going to join me in the studio to share her insights on the epic Greek story by Homer from truly centuries ago. And for some reason, it just continues to draw us into the adventure and the romance. So we'll get her insights, what she expects to see, and what might or might not be historically accurate in The Odyssey. Also in the film world, we're going to celebrate the birthday of Harrison Ford, who you may not realize got his start in acting right here in Wisconsin. And what makes this episode of What's on Tap particularly meaningful is that it is an opportunity to remember the life and impact of one of our impressive local philanthropists. This morning, the news that Donald Baumgartner passed away has rippled through our creative community. And the Baumgartner name may sound familiar. You see it on the Milwaukee Ballet building that is now just outside the Summerfest grounds. You might have walked past that recently or been in attendance there. Or you've heard the Baumgartner name over the decades as Donald and his wife Donna have served on boards on a range of cultural organizations. Well, Donald Baumgartner, Milwaukee businessman and philanthropist, and he has had such vision that has shaped our cultural landscape and our city landscape for generations, passed away at the age of 95. And he was best known, he was very successful in manufacturing, chairman of Paper Machinery Corporation, but his passion for the arts and his vision for civic leadership and philanthropy really did change the look and feel and culture of our city over the decades. And among his greatest contributions, the Milwaukee Art Museum. He was a longtime trustee and board leader during one of the museum's most pivotal periods. Roll back about 25 years ago, Donald Baumgartner was instrumental in helping bring Santiago Calatrava, the artist and architect, to Milwaukee to create the Quadracci Pavilion. And think about how much that has permanently changed our city's skyline and given us such a pride point, because that is Santiago Calatrava's first American creation in the architectural world. So we really are that landmark. And think about the iconic Burke Breeze de Soleil, those wings that open up that really are a symbol of the city. Donald Baumgartner helped make that happen. And even after the pavilion opened, continued supporting the Milwaukee Art Museum and being part of it. He also had a passion beyond visual art. Donald and Donna Baumgartner became some of the most influential supporters of the Florentine Opera Company, and so much so that they really made a transformative gift, $1.5 million, to permanently endow what is now known as the Donald and Donna Baumgartner Studio Artist Program to make sure we have more new young singers and generations of opera singers, and also major champions of the Milwaukee Ballet. As I mentioned, the Milwaukee Ballet building, and they have been very involved in keeping that going, and so many other organizations. List goes on and on. Milwaukee Youth Symphony Orchestra, the Milwaukee County Zoo, other cultural institutions. So instead of listing out the accomplishments, we're going to remember in stories and anecdotes with some of the people who knew Donald Baumgartner best, including Milwaukee Film Festival. And they helped so many organizations. And so over the next few hours, I am pleased to be able to share perspectives and stories from people who knew Donald Baumgartner, from sharing passions and missions of some of our most notable cultural institutions. I do have guests from the Florentine Opera Company and Milwaukee Film in our time together here on What's on Tap. And next, if you are proud of those Calatrava wings, the Breeze de Soleil, on the Milwaukee Art Museum building, you'll want to hear memories and stories about how Donald Baumgartner helped make that Calatrava wing possible. Stay with me as Milwaukee Art Museum Board Chair Andy Nunnemaker joins me next on What's on Tap.
You're listening to What's on Tap with Sandy Max on WTMJ.
Welcome back to What's on Tap. As we remember Donald Baumgartner, a name that you have probably heard, and one of our most visionary and impactful philanthropists over the decades. And as our city and truly our whole state reflects on the loss of such an influential man who has made such a positive impact together with his wife, Donna. We have a lot of people who were side by side with him, helping improve and embolden our creative culture. And joining me, Milwaukee Art Museum Board Chair, Andy Nunnemaker. Andy, I know as we're all reflecting and you are personally experiencing a loss, so my condolences to you, as certainly you were in the same circles in many creative worlds here in southeastern Wisconsin. And how are you feeling today?
Well, thanks so much, Sandy, and thanks for having me. We're all sad, obviously. Donald was just larger than life and played such an important role in Milwaukee. So we're all saddened by the news, and we hope that we can send Donna our thoughts and our prayers as well.
And who was Donald Baumgartner? How do you describe him?
Well, there's so many words. I mean, Donald lived larger than life. He lived life to the fullest, but he was truly one of our great civic leaders. He was a philanthropist. He did so much along with his wife, Donna, and just created this vision for what Milwaukee could be, and then acted on it and executed on that vision.
I think that's really important because I think a lot of people consider philanthropy, okay, nice people writing nice checks. But it seemed that Donald and Donna together were very, very active.
Yes, there's no doubt about it. Writing checks is always important, and we all appreciate that. But if you think about Donald and Donna's impact on the Milwaukee Art Museum, Donald was a trustee of ours for almost 40 years. He was actually on the building committee when they hired Santiago Calatrava and really pushed that vision through. And then he was board chair when we opened the Calatrava wing 25 years ago. And then finally in 2015, he and Donna named our director of the art museum with an estate gift. So they've just done much more than writing checks. It's really helping us imagine what we could become and then helping us become that.
And that's truly visionary. What more can you tell me about how he was involved in the Santiago Calatrava, even the idea of inviting a Spanish designer and architect to be part of the Milwaukee Lake Michigan Lakeshore over 25 years ago?
Right. Now that even goes back before my time and my involvement with the art museum. But from the stories I've heard, he was really one of the visionaries that pushed that through, from chairing the committee that selected Santiago to seeing through the construction. And then along with some other friends, really rallying the city to fund this amazing masterpiece we have on our lakefront. It's really become one of the icons of the city. And it's one of the most well-known museums in the country.
I mean, if you think, absolutely, and I would even say in the world, now that Santiago Calatrava is part of Milwaukee culture. And also, like you were saying, it's interesting that the Baumgartner's dedication to making sure we have world-class art and culture here is that they did see the solution for making sure we attract the best talent. Tell us more about the Donna and Donald Baumgartner, director of the Milwaukee Art Museum, that designation and why that's important.
Well, it allows us to go out and search for the highest caliber of people to lead the museum. When they initiated that gift, we were just hiring Marcel Poletnik, who led the museum for 9 years. And now our most recent search, hiring Kim Sayet from the Smithsonian, that gift allowed us to go out and find the very best. So we have the best building. We've arguably got one of the best art collections. Why shouldn't we have the best leadership to go along with that? And, their gift along with their vision ensures all of that.
Now, Andy, as the Milwaukee Art Museum board chair, you certainly have worked in close proximity with the Baumgartners. What is something that you have learned or that you will take with you in either talking with Donald or watching how he approaches his philanthropy?
Well, what I learned, especially from Donald, is you never retire, right? Donald, right up until this year, is involved. I just saw him and Donna a few weeks ago at the Florentine Opera's Pasta and Puccini dinner. He was as active as ever. He's joined our calls, both on our executive committee and our board. and contributes in meaningful ways. So, I mean, to me, that's an inspiration. It's a lifelong commitment to helping build these institutions, and he certainly lived that every day.
Well, and when you dedicate your life to art and creativity and are truly energized by it, I wonder what it's saying about your longevity to live to 95 and still be going to the Florentine Opera events and even organizing them.
Right, exactly. I mean, that is true leadership and true commitment.
And what's another favorite anecdote of yours that maybe tells us even more about Donald's personality and why? Because you have you have to have good connections and be able to inspire other people to see what you see, especially when you're a visionary. It's one thing to say, hey, I love the ballet, don't you? I love Milwaukee film, don't you? But to really inspire people to see farther like you do, he must have had some great personality or some...
Look, that's the thing we all love, and that's the thing we'll all miss the most. I hope Donna doesn't get mad at me for telling any stories, but we all went to Cuba together. We went to Havana with a group with the Art Museum about a decade ago, and you know, we were all so excited to be there. Donald was saying, well, come on, I was here in the 50s when Batista ran the place. It was a lot more fun back then. And for his 80th birthday, he rented out the Wynn and do a giant party, and he was preparing all that year to do 80 push-ups on his 80th birthday, and unfortunately got in a car accident a few weeks before, so wasn't able to do that. But that's just the way he lived his life.
Wow.
To the fullest in every degree.
you said he lived large. That is an inspiration. I'm surprised he didn't delegate to like 8 people to do 10 push-ups for him, you know?
Oh no, he wouldn't have. In fact, just a few weeks ago, he and Donner were telling me they bought electric wheelchair scooters so they could race around in the driveway and race each other. And that was just last month. So right to the end, he lived life to the fullest.
Andy Nunnemaker, Milwaukee Art Museum board chair, thank you so much for spending even some time with me on what is a sad and dark day for our Milwaukee cultural community. Yet, what you have just shared with us, I know that Donald Baumgartner will continue to inspire people even as we pause to grieve the loss of him.
Agreed. Thank you.
Thank you. And we welcome your memories and stories of Donald Baumgartner or places that you've enjoyed because of his work. The Milwaukee Art Museum, the Milwaukee Ballet, the Florentine Opera Company, Milwaukee Film, the Milwaukee County Zoo, and other spaces that Donald and his wife Donna have helped ensure are long-term here in our community. The Signing Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line is 855-616-1620. Text or call 855-616-1620 if you have memories, stories that you would like to share about the impact of Donald Baumgartner. I'm Sandy Max. Stay with me here on What's on Tap.
This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max.
Welcome back to What's on Tap, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee, handcrafted, homegrown, world-class. Discover more at visitmilwaukee.org. And a big thank you to Andy Nunnemaker. He is the Milwaukee Art Museum board chair who just took some time to share some memories of Donald Baumgartner. You recognize the name, a visionary, a philanthropist here in Milwaukee for absolute decades, and his work with the Milwaukee Art Museum alone has greatly improved and changed the Milwaukee city skyline and our cultural landscape because Donald Baumgartner was very involved in Milwaukee having the very first Calatrava-designed building in the United States. That Quadracci Pavilion, it has the Burke Breeze de Soleil, the wings on top, was part of the vision and rallying of Donald Baumgartner when he was part of the Milwaukee Art Museum's Board of Trustees and getting that extension. So that is just one of the many legacies that he is leaving in our cultural community. It was announced that he passed away at age of 95. And a nice quote Andy Nunnemaker had in Mary Spicuzza's Journal Sentinel article this morning. Andy said, testament to his life as he left Milwaukee better than he found it. And there are so many other ways that Donald Baumgartner and his wife, Donna, have elevated our city's arts. They very involved in the Milwaukee Art Museum, the Milwaukee Ballet with the Baumgartner Center, right there by the Summerfest grounds, the Florentine Opera Company, the Milwaukee Film Festival, also the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, an organization called Next Door, and so many other organizations. And they have just made such a wonderful impact. If you have memories or even a thank you to them for helping our city grow and blossom and be world-class, the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line is 855-616-1620. And if you're like, man, what's his backstory? Well, he was a longtime manufacturing company man, Paper Machinery Corporation. And with his business success, he and his son, John Baumgartner, they made international news. They turned over their Paper Machinery Corporation about 10 years ago to their employees, which so just really different way of thinking and really meaningful and makes an impact and really thinks of people. So really a legacy, and we'll explore that even more with more stories and anecdotes. So we just heard about how he wanted to do 80 push-ups on his 80th birthday from Andy, and that as recently as the past couple of weeks, Donna and Donald were at a Florentine Opera Company event. So truly living life to the fullest and enjoying every minute. True inspirations. Donald Baumgartner passes away at the age of 95. We'll hear more remembrances from the Florentine Opera Company and the Milwaukee Art Museum as we continue What's on Tap until 9 o'clock. And again, condolences to his wife, Donna, who shared his passion for the arts, great partners, and also to his family and friends. So I'm excited to share more of those memories and stories. Also excited to share with you that Wisconsin has achieved a world record. It was over July 4th weekend, and it's a fun one. I will give you those details. So stay with me here on What's on Tap. But right now, we go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center. Here is Jessica Gatzo.
What's on Tap with Sandy Max is back on WTMJ.
Bloody Mary. And a beer chaser. Oh man, we love that here in Wisconsin, don't we? I actually had a nice patio supper on Saturday, and trying to ease off the not go dry July. I won't go drastic, but I was like, oh, it was nice to have a lemonade, and my dinner partner had a virgin Bloody Mary. I was like, you know what? That does fit the bill, and you get all the vegetables and everything. You just kind of get to pace yourself with the alcohol intake. But it was a full-on big old Bloody Mary on July 4th. Did you hear the interview on What's on Tap? Smashed on the Rocks Saloon in Algoma. They had a big ambition for their 4th of July holiday. I talked to co-owner Raina Ninneman, and I was like, okay, tell me about this world record that you want to break. And they wanted to break the world record for the world's largest Bloody Mary. And they went all out. So this is, you know, fun lakeside bar. But they crafted this huge, over 6 foot, no, it's even taller than that, but this really tall mug that they dumped in gallons of tomato juice, gallons of Absolut vodka, all their, well, not only tomato juice, but it's a secret recipe of Grandma Smashed. If you go to WTMJ's YouTube live stream, if you text the word watch to the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line, text the word watch, W-A-T-C-H, to 855-616-1620, and you'll see a picture of this. So they had a music stage because they had a whole festival at Algoma's Smashed on the Rock Saloon, and you can see the people, there are all sorts of staff with buckets that are pouring it in, and then what they did, took them about an hour to mix this all up in this huge mug that unfilled, I think, was like a ton. It's that heavy. It's specially crafted. So then they were going to serve Bloody Marys with a beer chaser. And they made 300 gallons of Bloody Mary. They served them. And it's, as they wrote on Facebook, officially unofficial, they are world record holders. The world record was in Canada, somewhere just outside Toronto. And they had served, they had like 150 gallons. This is over 300 gallons. So we blew Canada, I'd say, out of the water, out of the tomato juice. But so it is this secret recipe of Grandma Smash. So they have this cardboard cutout of Grandma next to, because she passed away earlier this year. So they, all the Smashed on the Rocks Saloon employees knew, like, we got to do it for Grandma. So here's what happened. It's official, July 4th. And they said, it's about proving that a small town can dream big. And wow, did you all show up? Thousands of you packed the marina. Boats filled the harbor. Strangers became friends. The energy was unforgettable. For one incredible day, Algoma felt like the center of the world. And to the staff, think about it. They gave up their holiday. They worked through the heat, the crowds. It was endless lines. It was a little bit of chaos. But you believed in this crazy idea from day one. We will never be able to thank you enough. So this is all from the Smashed on the Rock Saloon's Facebook post. And then I didn't even think about this aspect. Think about all the summer weather we've been having. They wrote, if you've been around here the past few weeks, you know Mother Nature wasn't exactly on our side. Storm after storm had us wondering if this would even happen. Then somehow, picture it. The clouds cleared, the sun came out, the fog lifted, the lake was beautiful. We couldn't have scripted better weather. It was one of those days you'll remember forever. We planned every detail, from making 310-plus gallons of our award-winning Bloody Mary mix to partnering with Absolut Vodka, so every single free Bloody Mary with Beer Chaser was made with incredible ingredients. And that mug, it's red, it's 6 feet tall, it deserves to be its own attraction. I think it probably will be there, so... it's very fun. So I'm going to keep in touch with Raina to see if and when they get their official Guinness World Records certification. Because if you know anything about the Guinness World Book of Records, they are very specific. I have known events where Guinness folks want you to fly over one of their officials so they can make sure all the empirical data is tabulated and noticed. So I don't think they flew over a British person on this occasion, but I think you can send in some certifications. So we will find out. But still, that's an impressive feat. 300 plus pounds of delicious Bloody Mary. And I think that it would have served, I asked Raina, about 2,200 people. So that's a lot of happy people. And so, and they said, another thing they wrote on their Facebook page, we're still soaking it all in, and we're still finding tomato juice in places tomato juice should never be. So congratulations, Algoma's Smashed on the Rocks Saloon, breaking the world record for the world's largest Bloody Mary right here in Wisconsin. And next, your chance to win free concert tickets. Country music fans, one of the Bank 5-9 main stage performers, Bailey Zimmerman. Get ready for your chance to win tickets to see Bailey Zimmerman next on What's on Tap.
Welcome back to What's on Tap on WTMJ.
This is where it ends. I've been down a few broken.
That is the sound of Bailey Zimmerman. You may already know that. 23 days till the Wisconsin State Fair, and on Saturday, August 8th, Bailey Zimmerman will be on stage at the Bank 5-9 main stage. And if you're like, I know that name, he was in the news recently, but I will tell you, it has a happy ending. He was in the news recently because he trashed a hotel room. Usually what rock stars do, not necessarily country stars. Oh no, he had a grand old time in Albuquerque, did $16,000 worth of damage to a hotel room. But here's the nice part of the story. You know what he went, you know what? That was really not great. Let me pay for that. Let me take accountability, and I'm going to learn from that and not do that again. So points for accountability and being a stand-up guy, Bailey Zimmerman. But man, he has had a lot of success. He's a young star. And a lot of big songs, but he's really known for his energy on stage. And you just heard a little bit of Where It Ends, other songs, Rockin' a Hard Place, Religiously, Fall in Love. Holy smokes, he really has become a fast rising star and one of those performers to see in sing-along moments. So the Wisconsin State Fair concert lineup, always one of the highlights of the summer, and Bailey Zimmerman, really one of the biggest draws. A great excuse to spend a day at the fair. Get some cream puffs, check out the exhibits, and then head to Bailey Zimmerman on that Saturday night. And I would say get there early because Chandler Walters, steel guitar player and a multi-platinum all-genre number one songwriter. And if you're saying, hey, I kind of know his name, he earned big success. He co-wrote a song, I Had Some Help, featuring Morgan Wallen with superstar Post Malone. So that's the kind of company we're keeping here. Chandler Walters and Bailey Zimmerman. And if you would like to see lots of talent on stage, this is your chance to score a free pair of tickets. Caller number 8 on the Siding Unlimited WTMJ Talk and Text Line, 855-616-1620. Give a call. If you are caller number 8, love to set you up with a free pair of tickets to enjoy country music in the outdoors on a great summer night at the State Fair. Saturday, August 8th, Bailey Zimmerman, thus caller 8-855-616-1620. This is your first chance to win. I've got tickets Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday all week here on What's on Tap. So good luck. Caller number 8-855-616-1620. And get to know his music. One of his hits is the song you need to hear next on What's on Tap.
You're listening to What's on Tap with Sandy Max on WTMJ. And now, feast your ears. This is the song you need to hear.
Most blokes are going to be playing at 10. These go to 11.
Big congratulations to Scott in Economowoc. Just won a pair of tickets to see Bailey Zimmerman Saturday, August 8th, on stage at the Wisconsin State Fair, Bank 5-9 Main Stage, right there in the center of the raceway there. It'll be a fun show for country music fans. Chandler Walters opening up that show. And if you're like, oh man, I want to win some free tickets, you are in luck. You can win Bailey Zimmerman tickets at the Wisconsin State Fair August 8th, tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday with me. And if you're thinking, sounds interesting, what kind of music does he have? I'm right here for you. Tonight's song you need to hear is called Rockin' a Hard Place from Bailey Zimmerman. And it really, his breakthrough smash, 6 weeks at number one on Billboard's Country Airplay chart and top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100. So that is not typical to have a crossover hit, especially in the top 10. So what's this song about? About being trapped in a relationship that's fallen apart. I think we've all been in one of those. Enjoy the emotion here of Bailey Zimmerman. Just a few years into his career, he's got several number one hits, billions of streams, and one of country's biggest young stars, Bailey Zimmerman, Saturday, August 8th on the Bank 5-9 main stage at the Wisconsin State Fair, and Rockin' a Hard Place, the song you need to hear on What's on Tap. Rockin' a Hard Place, the song you need to hear on What's on Tap from Bailey Zimmerman. And why? Because Bailey Zimmerman, one of the Bank 5-9 main stage lineup acts at the Wisconsin State Fair this year. August 8th is when you can see him on stage. And if you'd like me to treat you to a pair of tickets, that is possible. You have free chances to win free tickets to Bailey Zimmerman tomorrow night, Wednesday night, and Thursday night here on What's on Tap. So maybe set your phone alarm for 6 o'clock so you don't miss What's on Tap and a chance to win some freebies. And if you're like, well, great that the state fair is, what, 23 days away? They've got a countdown on their website. It's like, ooh, it's coming up faster than I think. But if you're like, hey, who else is performing? No problem. I've got you covered. Bailey Zimmerman with Chandler Walters on Saturday, August 8th. My friend Amy is very psyched about Hairball, the cover band. I've heard all good things about this show. Hairball on August 6th. Nelly, Friday, August 7th for King and Country. Monday, August 10th, and the Beach Boys, if that's not the sound of summer, I don't know what is. They are closing out the Wisconsin State Fair on Sunday, August 16th. You've also got two incredibly talented women, Winona Judd and Melissa Etheridge. That is Sunday, August 9th, and some fun, upbeat rock, All-American Rejects on Thursday, August 13th, and then this is going to be a great R&B night, the Isley Brothers with the Commodores on Tuesday, August 11th, and here to make us laugh, John Mulaney, Mr. Whatever, on Wednesday, August 12th, and Lindsay Sterling brings her electric violin and all of her entertainment with Friday, not with, but on Friday, August 14th, and AJR is performing on Saturday, August 15th. So WIStateFair.com if you want to browse the entertainment on the Bank 5-9 main stage and set your taste buds for cream puffs, because just like, you know, Summerfest happens, then it's 4th of July, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, here we go. It's 11 days of the Wisconsin State Fair, and we will be broadcasting live there. You know, we love to be in the fishbowl and taste all the tastes and smell all the smells and enjoy the annual tradition. So stay with us here on What's on Tap. We are going to dig into The Odyssey, the blockbuster film, and more remembrances of philanthropist Donald Baumgartner. Stay with us on What's on Tap.
Your need-to-know cultural snapshot of Wisconsin and beyond. This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee. A deep dive into all things intriguing, riveting, and entertaining. Now, here's your host, Sandy Max.
Welcome to this second hour of a supersized episode of What's on Tap this evening, where we will continue to remember the legacy and incredibly positive impact that Donald Baumgartner has made in Milwaukee and Wisconsin with his philanthropy, and passed away at the age of 95. That news released this morning, and have been sharing memories. Got to hear from Andy Nunnemaker, who is the Milwaukee Art Museum board chair, and shared some stories and anecdotes. And we'll also hear from the Florentine Opera Company and also Milwaukee Film about the impact that Donald Baumgartner and along with his wife Donna have made over the decades. And I think it's going to be interesting to be enlightened for what we do know about also the Milwaukee Ballet and the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra. I think there are also contributions that we might be surprised that they have made throughout the years. So also welcoming your memories of Donald Baumgartner as well on the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line 855-616-1620. I wanted to share this one memory with you before we jump all the way in to The Odyssey, the big blockbuster film that's coming out, and maybe some hot takes from an English professor. But I do want to share this one memory. Melissa was sweet and texted in this memory of Donald Baumgartner. And she texted in, "I worked for Donald Baumgartner, or as I called him, Mr. B, at the Paper Machinery Corporation 30 years ago. I was his assistant, and he was so much fun. I remember all the countless hours working on the clerical end of fundraising for UPAF and the museum, and he and Donna always made the hard work so easy to be a part of. They always made you feel that you were making a difference. His sense of humor and his smile were definitely one for the books. He was truly interested in who you were and what was important to you, and that you were an integral part of the team. Mr. B will always be a huge part of the person that I am now. He and Donna taught me so many life lessons in the time I worked there, and will always be grateful for them." So thank you, Melissa, for sharing that on the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line, welcoming your memories, and you will hear more stories coming up on What's on Tap. And I am very excited to welcome to the WTMJ studio from Marquette University, Dr. Leah Culligan Flack. How are you, Leah?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
It is my,
I'm excited to be here.
It is my pleasure. I'm glad that our mutual friend Melissa connected us and said, you know, with the blockbuster IMAX film about The Odyssey coming out with Matt Damon this weekend, what about an interesting take on the literature that it's based on? But also, you're very contemporary. We've been comparing notes and like what you hope is going to be in this Christopher Nolan film. Because, you know, Christopher Nolan, his last movie was Oppenheimer. So he's an ambitious man. So
right.
Now he's taking on a 3,000-year-old story. So thank you for joining me. And before, since you, this is your world of expertise, for a lot of people who haven't read The Odyssey since high school, what's the Cliff Notes version or the elevator pitch?
The Cliff Notes, the Spark Notes version, is this is a 3,000-year-old story that stars Odysseus, who was a Trojan War hero, and it is about his 20-year voyage home to Ithaca from Troy. This is a journey that should have taken about a week. It's 560 nautical miles, but it took him 20 years.
Is it because he kept experiencing the hurdles of the mythical beasts that are in his way? And
he angered the wrong god. So along the way, he blinded the Cyclops, who is the son of Poseidon. And Poseidon cursed his journey and delayed it. So he was at the war for 10 years. It took him 10 years to get home. And so it's a fundamentally human story. So we have three casts of characters. We've got the gods up in the heavens who are petty and childish and squabbling with each other. We have Odysseus and his men trying to get to Ithaca. And then we are in Ithaca with the queen of Ithaca, Penelope, and her son Telemachus. They're trying to fight off suitors who are trying to take Odysseus's place. They haven't heard a word about him. And so they don't know that he's still alive and trying to get home. And so those are kind of our three settings at the beginning.
And automatically, as soon as you say that, I'm like, well, that tests your faith. And that's, you know, so there are those universal themes in storytelling that were just as potent 3,000 years ago as they are now.
This is a deeply human story that continues to resonate. There have been more than 60 translations of the Odyssey in English. There have been countless adaptations in poetry, play, film, opera. And this is a story that has compelled people through the ages, because what is more universal than a desire to return home, a desire to return to who we fundamentally are? Odysseus is unlike the heroes of the Iliad, in who were known for their warrior prowess. He's known for enduring and surviving. And so he really is a great representation of kind of every person and our struggles through life.
Adaptability. There's all those. Yeah,
absolutely. He's known as the man of many twists and turns in one translation. And I love that the most recent translator of the Odyssey kind of condensed that to one word, complicated. He's a complicated man.
So tell me about your personal history with the Odyssey as an English professor.
So in graduate school, I was just interested in why there seemed to be an Odyssey in every national literature, in every era, and just noticed that there was a lot of attention to Homer in periods of political conflict, so periods of war. So I've written about people across Europe who used the Odyssey right after World War I to try to almost imagine a path forward for the world after a horrific war. I think that it's no accident that we're in our own Homeric moment, since we've in the 21st century, we've had so much conflict. And so we see all kinds of new novel adaptations and, stories that are sort of bringing this story to life for our own moment.
What is it about Homer's Odyssey, literally his journey to get back home, that you think resonates during these times of turmoil?
I think this idea of endurance and survival as values that we can all rally behind, we might not be encountering sirens and monsters on our journeys, but we do have our struggles and our obstacles. And so I think that we can very much identify with that. Odysseus survives not because he's godlike as a fighter, but he survives by his wits. And he provides a hero that we can kind of all rally around. He's a very flawed hero. Leads to his own undoing at different moments, like when he's sailing away from the Cyclops after he's blinded him. He could have gotten away, but he has to yell back to him, "Hey, the person who blinded you was me, Odysseus from Ithaca." He couldn't
remember
my
name.
Pass.
Right,
right, exactly. So that called the curse down on him. So he's a flawed hero, but he's one we can rally around. Oh,
and one we can understand. Like, I want credit for that.
Yeah.
You know, those parts of your your ego that you, like, you want people to know. That's funny. I am with Dr. Leah Flack from Marquette University, who you insist I call you Leah, not doctor.
Absolutely.
Okay. And but I'm excited to talk with you more about, you mentioned Cyclops and and for anybody who's like, spoiler alert, you know, this is a story. It's been around 3,000 years. So we won't give away anything. And we also don't know exactly what is going to be in the Christopher Nolan film.
Right.
So I want to ask you, Leah, more about what you think may or may not be in the film, and also some of the cast of characters that you hope will be in the film. So stay with us as we preview Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey, blockbuster movie coming out this weekend.
This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max.
Tell me what you remember.
A wife, a son,
and then what?
We won the war. Help me go home.
That is from the trailer, The Odyssey, Christopher Nolan's newest movie, his first one since Oppenheimer. This is larger than life, filmed on IMAX and coming out. I've got my IMAX ticket for Thursday, and it'll be out this weekend. Probably one of the biggest blockbusters of this summer, if not the biggest. And to share her expertise and knowledge and enthusiasm for this film, Marquette University English professor Dr. Leah Flack is with me. And Leah, when's the first time you read The Odyssey? Did you fall in love with it, or did you just go, okay, this is a classic and I need to read it?
No, I actually came to it backwards. I read James Joyce's Ulysses first, which is, you know, this kind of mammoth 20th century novel that's based on The Odyssey. And then I thought, I should go back and read The Odyssey. The fact that I did it in reverse rather than reading the original first meant that I saw The Odyssey as fundamentally strange and modern and experimental. So I think that that's influenced how I've read it ever since.
Instead of a stuffy,
yep.
Well, I would say stuffy 3,000-year-old story, yeah. But I don't think there's anything stuffy about it. You had shared with me, thank you for bringing me up to speed in my own like mini course, but to learn that this story is older than Greek writing. This story is oral.
Yep. I think that's something for us to keep in mind. I think that people who are going to theaters this weekend to see the film will be having conversations about how true this movie is to the Homeric original. And I think that that's a nice idea, but I think that that might be kind of a misguided idea. The Odyssey existed for hundreds of years before it was written down and became a single story.
And how did it exist for hundreds of years before anybody wrote it down?
There were rhapsodes who were singers in ancient Greece who would sing little pieces of it as after dinner entertainment. And so it was the opposite of stuffy. If it wasn't entertaining and gripping, if it didn't have audiences on the edges of their seats, the rhapsode wouldn't get paid as much, right? Or wouldn't get honored as much. And so, it was
the tip jar.
Exactly. It was kind of part of, American Idol 3,000, years ago. So where there would be contests where people would sing parts of it. Some of the most famous parts of the Odyssey, like the Cyclops story and the Siren story, exist in hundreds of other traditions and forms, and it absorbed them and kind of became a big anthology.
This is, I think that's, so super not stuffy. And then how in the world does Christopher Nolan boil this down to a 2-hour and 52-minute film, but considering all of the adventures that he has, what do you expect to see in this 3-hour epic film?
I'm very excited for it. And I think that he was probably the right person to do it. What I expect to see and what I hope to see is not an over-reliance on the Homeric text, but on, him focusing on producing a fantastic and entertaining and thoughtful film in its own right. And I think that that is the mark of a great adaptation. And so a couple of things that I have a feeling are going to be part of this story, and I'll find out if I'm right this weekend. I would expect Odysseus to be a complex figure. So not a kind of two-dimensional caricature of a figure. Casting Matt Damon suggests that that's the direction that he's going to go in. I'm really interested in seeing what he does with the women in the Odyssey. The Homeric text is actually really radical in its presentation of Odysseus's wife, Penelope.
How is it radical?
Being just as cunning and as resourceful as he is. When he arrives home at long last, and this isn't too much of a spoiler, she doesn't welcome him with open arms. She tests him. She constructs a series of kind of mental tests that he has to pass. She survives and stays single and faithful really by her own wiles and her own artistry. And I would
expect... Because that's a 20-year wait.
That is. And she had a lot of reason to sort of remain unmarried. She was able to retain her power in the palace.
We see how many stories in before the 20th century where women don't have power and or property, or wealth. And so for her to be a strong figure is interesting.
One tactic she used that's so fascinating is she said to the hundreds of suitors who are overrunning the palace, I can't remarry until I weave a funeral shroud for Laertes, Odysseus's father, who is still alive. And so she would weave this during the day, and at night she would unweave it. So she never made any progress. And she got away with this for several years before any of them noticed.
Because no one else knew how to weave. All the men didn't know how to weave.
Exactly.
They didn't know that she was being crafty. How fun. She is Dr. Leah Flack from Marquette University. More insights from an academic perspective, but also a film enthusiast. We'll find out more about what you think will be in the film and what you hope will be in the film. And maybe talk about some Cyclops. Stay with us on What's on Tap.
What's on Tap with Sandy Max is back on WTMJ.
Just sounds like an epic. The Odyssey, directed by Christopher Nolan, is being released. You can find it Thursday, but officially on Friday. But it is going to be one of the biggest movies of the summer. Matt Damon plays Odysseus. You have Anne Hathaway as Penelope, Zendaya and Tom Holland. Robert Pattinson, who is still Team Edward for me, but from Twilight, I'm happy to see him. Charlize Theron, Travis Scott. It's a big, interesting, versatile cast that will be telling this 3,000-year-old story in the 21st century. And in the studio with me from Marquette University, English professor, Dr. Leah Flack. And Leah, some of the flack that has happened on social media is about the language itself. And that when the trailer came out, there are people who say, why are they speaking American English? And I heard the word dad. And there are people who thought who have said, well, shouldn't it be like proper British English? And it's like, well, but this is a Greek story. So neither of those languages were being spoken. What is your thought on how this script should be spoken, and what is there a proper way to speak it?
My sense is that the language should feel alive and vital, and it should advance the story. It should tell us who the characters are and what their relationships are to each other. And I think that an attempt in 2026 to make something seem static and British and high culture actually fundamentally goes against what the sort of original context of the Odyssey was. So I want to see something that feels vibrant and current. And I want something that is in a vernacular that we actually can identify with, because then we can identify with the characters more. I was really excited to see that Christopher Nolan chose Emily Wilson's 2017 translation. She is someone who I think has reinvented Homer for our era. And she has made the story exciting. She's made it a page turner. And she's done so. I mean, she has all the classics credentials. She's a University of Pennsylvania classicist. She knows her stuff, but she has actually corrected centuries of misreadings of the text, and she's made it alive. And she's done it in a language that, you know, that middle schoolers could read comfortably and happily.
If you assign the Odyssey in your class at Marquette, what version do you assign?
Emily Wilson, be it for a freshman class or for a graduate class. I've done it in both.
Because you think it's that well-researched and that authentic?
Students get also so excited that they have much richer things to say about it. I had a class of engineering students arguing about whether Penelope is the hero of the Odyssey after reading this. I never saw that kind of enthusiasm or that depth of reading from the other translations as students sort of struggled through something that might have tried to sound more like high culture.
Dr. Leah Flack from Marquette University, English professor. And after we check in with the news, we'll talk a little bit more about what to expect and you have a couple more hot takes on the Odyssey, what you've seen so far. So we'll check in and with the WTMJ Breaking News Center and then continue our Odyssey conversation. And now in the WTMJ Breaking News Center, here is Jessica Gatzo.
Thanks, Sandy.
Welcome back to What's on Tap on WTMJ.
Welcome back to What's on Tap, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee. Handcrafted, homegrown, world-class. Discover more at visitmilwaukee.org. Talking about the Odyssey, Homer's epic poem that influenced everything to this police song where there's a lyric that said, trapped between the Scylla and Charybdis. And I'm here with Dr. Leah Flack from Marquette University, English professor. That is part of the Odyssey, isn't it?
It is, yes. It's the Odysseus needs to make a choice whether to take on Scylla, who's a monster, or Charybdis, which is a whirlpool.
So it is fascinating. That came to me in the shower today. Honestly, I was like, oh my gosh, Homer's The Odyssey has influenced all kinds of art ever since 3,000 years ago.
Thank you for seeing that. That during my dissertation, I was convinced I was losing my mind because I also saw it everywhere, but it really is everywhere.
Where else have you seen
I'm thinking about
Odyssey
The Simpsons,
references.
Right? I mean, something as basic as that, right? That's they not only do several episodes that have their own kind of take on that. But if I wanted to see the word Homer all over the place during those years, I had there was no kind of shortage of that.
That is so obvious. So we're talking about The Odyssey, the huge blockbuster film filmed on IMAX. I think it's IMAX is saying it's the only film that's ever been completely filmed on IMAX. So this is truly an epic adventure filmed by Christopher Nolan, the same director who filmed the Oppenheimer film and won many awards. And Matt Damon plays Odysseus, Anne Hathaway, Tom Holland, Zendaya, Robert Pattinson, Charlize Theron, and Travis Scott are all part of this cast. And what does it mean to you that Travis Scott and what role he's going to be?
I was so excited to see this as a decision. So first of all, we don't know who Homer was. We don't even know if Homer was a real person. The information we get on this is largely through the depiction of poets and bards in the Odyssey. And so Christopher Nolan has cast Travis Scott in that role as the bard.
Who's
and
already so, a well-known rapper.
Absolutely. And so the fact that he chose a well-known rapper to represent the sort of, you know, the voice and the storyteller of the age, I think tells us a lot about the kind of risks he's taking that I think are going to really pay off.
And also the attempt to be accessible, to not have anybody who says, you know, if you turn to your grandma and say, I'm going to see the Odyssey, and she says, I read that in high school.
Right.
You might be going, maybe I don't want to see the Odyssey. Maybe it sounds a little stuffy, but this looks like a massive adventure. Where will you watch the Odyssey, Leah?
I will be in Buffalo visiting family, so I have tickets to go see it this Friday.
Are you seeing it on IMAX?
I am. Yeah.
Is there any other choice for
you? We're going to be so spoiled by this. I've wondered for years since I first got interested in the Odyssey why we don't have a great film version of it. And I think that seeing Christopher Nolan use all of the resources of cinema to bring this ancient tale to life is just so exciting.
And what's one of the themes that you think this ancient tale just captures people's fascination, interest, and desire to hear a story about?
I think that the idea of homecoming, the Greek word nostos, which is the root of nostalgia, I think this yearning to return to a time that was simpler, to who we were in the past, before struggles, I think that that speaks to everyone across history. Something that I think is really fascinating about the Odyssey is that it doesn't romanticize that journey. Odysseus actually gets home, and this isn't a spoiler because it happens in the middle of the story. It's not the ending. It isn't this kind of happy, safe arrival. He gets home and he doesn't recognize it. He doesn't get home to a sort of warm homecoming into the truth. He lies for several books to everybody, disguises himself. It's not a peaceful homecoming. He actually brings the violence of the battlefield to Ithaca with him in devastating fashion. In fact, there's a great book called Odysseus in America by Jonathan Shea, who is a classics major in college and a psychiatrist. And he argues that Odysseus was the first literary case of PTSD in the literary tradition. So someone who was unable to return home and leave the scars and wounds and fights of battle safely at battle. So he brought that home with him.
That's interesting and very human. And so many people in so many walks of life cope with PTSD,
absolutely,
whether it's first responders or military or domestic abuse situations. It's interesting, those universals, and what an interesting observation. Mm-hmm. So you will see it for sure. As an English professor, as the semester starts, is this on your syllabus?
It will be, for sure. Yeah. It's not going to be this fall because of what I'm teaching, but as soon as I teach at the Odyssey again, it will absolutely be on my syllabus.
Well, I may see if you'll come back for your Odyssey review, since I know you'll be seeing it. So
several times. I'm a repeat viewer, so yeah.
Well, thank you very, very much. She is
thank
Dr.
you.
Leah Fleck, Marquette University English professor and Odyssey enthusiast. I appreciate your insights, and may you enjoy the Odyssey.
Same to you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And as we keep in films, Harrison Ford, one of my favorite actors, who is somehow not in the Odyssey, but I wouldn't have ruled him out as being a cast member. But Harrison Ford's birthday is today. And we're going to wish happy birthday to Harrison Ford and also find out how Wisconsin gave him his acting start next on What's on Tap.
You're listening to What's on Tap with Sandy Max on WTMJ.
Raiders of the Lost Ark theme song in honor of Harrison Ford's birthday. Today, Harrison Ford celebrates, and you know what he might be doing? He often is seen at EAA Air Venture because he is such a aviation enthusiast, and he's a pilot himself. But what I want to talk about today is his acting career. I mean, think about it. You just heard Raiders of the Lost Ark. Of course, you've seen him in Star Wars. What the heck? Tell me what your favorite Harrison Ford movie is as we celebrate his birthday. The Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line 855-616-1620. What's your favorite Harrison Ford movie? I've got a few. There's a real niche one called The Mosquito Coast, which I can highly recommend. But I would say Blade Runner is probably my favorite Harrison Ford movie. But he's good in so many things. He was good in Witness. So we could go on and on. So share with me your favorite Harrison Ford film, 855-616-1620. But it was a real treat to have author Dean Robbins, Madison-based, and wrote a book called Wisconsin Idols. And it's a lot of people with Wisconsin connections who made an impact on him. And when Dean was in the studio with me, he shared this interesting information about Harrison Ford.
He has a little-known connection to Wisconsin, believe it or not. He was from Chicago, but he went to Ripon College in the early 1960s, and he was sleeping through his classes and flunking out. And in his last quarter, realizing that he wouldn't have the grades to graduate, he thought, what the heck, I'm going to overcome my stage fright and sign up for a theater class. And he starred in a production of The Skin of Our Teeth in Ripon's Red Barn Theater, wearing a fake mustache, and he absolutely loved it. And he thought, maybe I found my vocation in life, finally. And to be sure, he signed up to do community theater that summer in Williams Bay, Wisconsin, at this place called the Belfry Players Theater. And he supported himself doing carpentry work for the theater on the side. And at the end of the summer, he thought, you know what? I'm going to head to Hollywood and try my luck there. He spent a few more years supporting himself with carpentry, but then he finally made his breakthrough as Han Solo in Star Wars and Indiana Jones, and here we are.
I had known that he'd gone to school in Ripon, but I didn't realize that he had really discovered acting and his aptitude for it here.
Yes, it's a foundational place for him.
To know that this really did help shape his career was great. And then if you remember earlier this year at the Actor Awards, which used to be the SAG Awards, Harrison Ford got the Lifetime Achievement Award, and there was this moment in his acceptance speech, and I was just going, say Wisconsin, say Wisconsin, say Wisconsin.
In my third year of college, I was a little lost. I was failing at school. I felt isolated, alone. And then I found the company of people putting on plays, storytellers. People I once thought were misfits and geeks turned out to be my people.
And then he started in Star Wars and found more of those good geeks that have helped his career. But he's also great in Shrinking. Honestly, what's one of Harrison Ford's favorite roles? 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. And going back to Ripon for a second, that Red Barn Theater, before Harrison Ford got there, Al Jarreau was at Ripon College performing with a vocal group called the Indigos. And then a couple years after Al Jarreau graduated was when Harrison Ford got there. And unfortunately, 1964, the Red Barn Theater was destroyed in a fire. So you can't, because I was like, oh, I'd like to kind of go. Maybe they have a blue plaque to Harrison Ford. Nope, that landmark is not there. So now you know a real true Wisconsin connection to Harrison Ford. And producer Isaac Marquardt with me. You know couple of my favorite Harrison Ford titles. What's one of your favorite Harrison Ford films?
I have an Indiana Jones marathon about every 6 months. So that would be my favorite. Also really love him in Shrinking.
Yes, he is. He's evolved so much in his career.
Yeah, it's excellent. Great show.
Yeah, so good reason to stream a Harrison Ford film or two. But happy birthday to Harrison Ford from all of us in Wisconsin. And we hope we see you again at EAA, maybe this coming week ahead. And as we talk about EAA Air Venture in Oshkosh, that is one of many things that brings people to our state of Wisconsin. Debbie Lozga has a very interesting feature about the research, not just the economic impact, but research being done on Wisconsin tourism. You'll hear that next on What's on Tap.
This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max.
Stretching out this birthday celebration for Harrison Ford today, celebrating and his Wisconsin connection. If you didn't realize, he got his acting start at Ripon College, or he really went like, wow, these are my people. And if he hadn't gone to Ripon College and discovered his creative streak, he just would have stayed being a carpenter. Instead, we get to see him in Star Wars and Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I do want to know, I'm a huge Harrison Ford fan, so I would love to know your favorite films. The Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line, 855-616-1620, 855-616-1620. I confess to loving Blade Runner. And the Mosquito Coast is a deeper cut if you want to see 1980s Harrison Ford in a different role, in a flawed man, but good film. And Witness is what 262 texted in. I love this. Witness, not even close. Also one of my top 10 movies of all time. That is an excellent movie. That is very good. So it's a nice excuse as ever to dig into Harrison Ford titles, or start watching Shrinking if you haven't been watching that series with Jason Segel and Harrison Ford. It's a good ensemble cast, and it lets Harrison Ford be funny and curmudgeon-y, but also evolve as an actor. So those are my thoughts. Share your Harrison Ford favorites. 855-616-1620. And, you know, Wisconsin tourism, especially in the summertime, already a multi-billion dollar industry, but one UW La Crosse researcher says the state's next challenge may be changing what people think they know about it. WTMJ's Debbie Lazaga reports.
When people outside the Midwest think of Wisconsin, they may picture beer, cheese, and the Packers. Tanner Knorr did too. He moved to Wisconsin last year and now serves as the director of the Tourism Research Institute at UW La Crosse.
For me, I definitely thought beer, cheese, and Packers. But here, there is a diverse, talented group with an intense appreciation for both nature and community.
That first impression matters, because Knorr says Wisconsin is not hurting for visitors.
Wisconsin brought in about $25 billion in direct, indirect, and induced impacts from tourism just in 2024. And it was the third consecutive year of record-breaking revenue for the state.
So the question is not really whether people are coming. They are. At UW La Crosse, Knorr and his students are looking at what happens when they do. That is the work of the Tourism Research Institute. Not just counting visitors, not just adding up hotel stays or restaurant tabs. The Institute studies what tourism does to a place, the money it brings in, the pressure it can put on natural resources, and how communities feel about the crowds that show up. Knorr and his students have studied Lake Onalaska, looking at environmental, social, and political effects. This summer, they are also studying the Toma Tractor Pull, which brings tens of thousands of people to Monroe County. For Knorr, that kind of work helps communities answer a bigger question. What do we want tourism to look like here?
It's not just about the numbers. It's so important to understand what resources are within the area and how well those are being conserved and managed.
That way of thinking also changes the sales pitch. Wisconsin will always have the things people already know. Door County, the North Woods, Lambeau Field, the Dells. But Knorr says there is more to show. Tribal tourism beyond casinos, Hmong communities, farm-to-table experiences, dark skies in rural Wisconsin, and in the western part of the state, the kind of drive people might not expect.
I would definitely recommend people to take the Great River Road or Route 35 up and down the Mississippi through the Bluffs.
He says that is the shift Wisconsin still has to make, from a place people pass through to a reason they get in the car.
If you're taking a cross-country road trip, you kind of have to swing a little bit out of the way to go to Wisconsin. So making it the destination and not the place where we're going through.
But Knorr says more visitors is not automatically a win. A busy weekend can fill hotel rooms and restaurants. It can also fill roads, parks, and boat launches.
You have to manage both the upkeep of the place, the conservation of the place, while also trying to drive those numbers up.
So for Wisconsin, the next chapter may not be about inventing a new identity. It may be about showing people the one that is already here and making sure that it's cared for before, during, and after they visit. Debbie Lazaga, WTMJ News.
Wisconsin tourism. Hopefully you are enjoying some of our scenery. It's been wonderful this past weekend when I was running errands, just seeing the thick, green, leafy trees. I enjoy it. So thanks to Debbie Lazaga for that interesting feature. And then before we get into the top of the hour news, I got to take care of some folks who are also Harrison Ford fans. Happy birthday, Harrison Ford, who got his start acting at Ripon College. And Jeannie and Brookfield called in on the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line 855-616-1620. Jeannie's a big Regarding Henry fan. Also got a text from 414, clear and present danger. And also that the Belfry Theater that Harrison Ford performed in is still in Williams Bay, Highway 50 and 67. And also James texted in, Harrison Ford, American Graffiti, put him on the map. George Lucas gave him a chance. So again, lots of great titles to enjoy Harrison Ford films. Stay with us here on What's on Tap as we continue to remember Milwaukee philanthropist Donald Baumgartner. Stay with us on What's on Tap.
Your need-to-know cultural snapshot of Wisconsin and beyond. This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee, a deep dive into all things intriguing, riveting, and entertaining. Now, here's your host, Sandy Max.
Welcome to this bonus hour of What's on Tap on this Monday night, July 13th. And we found out that on July 11th, Donald Baumgartner passed away. And if you're saying, I know that name, you do, because he has made such an impact over the decades here in Milwaukee, not just as a businessman at Paper Machinery Corp, where he built this company that he wound up turning over to his employees about 10 years ago. So continuing to make sure people have a job and are successful, but his big impact has been in our cultural community, working with the Milwaukee Art Museum, the Milwaukee Ballet, Florentine Opera Company, Milwaukee Film Festival, Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, and so many other organizations that it's such a long list to read out. And I'm grateful to be here at WTMJ and be in this role so I can help elevate the message, celebrate Donald Baumgartner's life and achievements, and hopefully inspire more people to embrace life and embrace the arts and culture as he did. So I was able to talk with Milwaukee Art Museum board chair Andy Nunnemaker at the very beginning of the show. So we'll post this episode as a podcast so you can catch up on that. And he had wonderful stories to share. We're going to visit with Milwaukee Film to hear about how involved Donald and his wife Donna have been involved with Milwaukee Film. And right now I am very honored to be joined by the Florentine Opera Company General Director and CEO, Maggie Opplinger. Maggie, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? I'm happy to be here to talk about a wonderful person.
Well, tell us. I kind of gave a bit of a summary, but who was Donald Baumgartner?
You know, I think one of the things you said that really reflects a lot of who he seems to me is somebody who really does relish life and relish the arts. And I've been thinking so much about him these last few days. And, you know, one of the things I love in thinking about him is how similar I feel like his approach is, whether it's talking about race cars or family trips he's taken or wonderful adventures he's had with Donna. And he speaks with the same, He spoke with the same enthusiasm about all of those things as he did when talking about Madama Butterfly, which was his favorite opera. And that passion for life and for doing good in the world, there are very few people who have that spark so profoundly in kind of every direction. And I think he looked for adventure, he looked for experiences, and he looked for how he could influence and impact other people's lives for the better. And he did it every day of his life, from what I can tell. And, you know, for those of us who had the honor of spending time with him and being a part of that, he's a profound influence. He's someone I think I'll be kind of picturing as a voice in my head for the rest of time.
Oh, well, and truly my condolences to you, because you did get to work with him on something you're both very passionate about, the Florentine Opera mm-hmm. Company, and having it be successful yeah. here in Milwaukee. What is it about opera that Donald Baumgartner loved?
You know, opera, we always joke, is the more is more art form. And Donald was not a minimalist in any way. Everything we do, even if it's a show with a smaller cast, is very big. There are layers to what we do. And so a number of the groups you've mentioned, we get to work with. The Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra plays our shows. We have an emerging artist program called the Baumgartner Studio Artist Program that Donald and Donna endowed. And, you know, when we talk about growing artists and creating art that is so multi-layered. So we've got movement and incredible performing and singing and the symphony in the pit and our sets and lights and everything happening on stage. It takes so many people and so much work. And I think, you know, just because Donald is such a thoughtful and curious person, I think he enjoyed it and enjoyed digging into it. And by supporting this incredible program for younger artists, he's also allowing people who are going through a career path that takes as many years as going to medical school but will never pay as well, helping them learn their craft and learn it in Milwaukee and share their talents in Milwaukee. And so one of the last performances I think he attended was our Pasta and Puccini event a few weeks ago. And he got to hear two of the alumni of that program perform that night. And I'm really, it makes me emotional to think about that because the impact they are having on these performers, it's over 30 people now. It's profound and it changes lives. And it doesn't just change and benefit the opera company. It changes the lives of these performers who have the opportunity to perform at a company of our size, to get experience on stage, and to learn and grow. And it's challenging to do that. And I think it's a testament to both of them and their commitment to artists and not just the art form, that that's how they wanted to invest. I think it's incredible.
Maggie Opplinger, Florentine Opera Company General Director and CEO, with us sharing her memories of Donald Baumgartner, who passed away over the weekend at age 95, and you said was just at Pasta and Puccini. And for him to get the gift of singing those students out of a program that he and his wife Donna made sure is endowed and going to continue and bringing that next generation, that had to have moved him.
You know, I think that was one of his great joys, was looking around at all of the ways that he was creating and sustaining art in our city. And to hear him talk about it was always really fun, because I think for him it was fun. I think investing that way, and in the same way as they, you know, transferred their company to the people who had worked so hard for it, I think he just took such joy in all of that, that it really stands as a, I don't know, I think a model to all of us to not only look around and see how we can make the world better, but also to enjoy that and take pleasure in being part of a community. And he did it with a great sense of humor and with every breath he took. I mean, I think it's incredible, and I hope at 95 I'm going to performances and enjoying artists and being with my friends and my loved ones.
Agreed, Maggie. And I love that you said creating and sustaining art, because so many things that Donald and his wife, Donna, the Baumgartners have done have been forward thinking for the community, like this studio artist program that is going to continue to bring the next generation, making sure that by the Calatrava addition to the Milwaukee Art Museum, 2001, it was the Time Building of the Year. So seeing that would literally transform our city skyline and bring the world's eyes to us by having a Spanish artist like Santiago Calatrava have his very first American building be right here in Milwaukee, and that's going to live on.
Just amazing. Just amazing. Like I said, he's a more is more guy.
More is more. Well, give me a, you mentioned he has a sense of humor. Tell me the last time that Donald made you laugh. Let's leave on a high note together.
We went to a we ran into each other there at a chamber theater performance recently. And I think Donald and I both saw each other, saw ourselves in some of those characters. And we were chatting about it after the show and just laughing about seeing, you know, the humor and lived experience reflected in the show. And being able to be a little self-deprecating about it was pretty hilarious. So, you know, I think just in general, he looked for the funny side of things. And at the same time, it was the same person who'd look at me when I'd sit down with him and go, "Hey, my dear, what do you need?" And he really lived life with an enormous amount of joy. And I think when you've lived for 95 beautiful years, that's what we should all take away from it.
Maggie Opplinger, Florentine Opera Company General Director and CEO, thank you so much for joining me and sharing your experiences and the wonderful memories of Donald Baumgartner.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Take care. We'll see you again soon. And we will continue remembering the legacy and learning other impactful ways that Donald Baumgartner has had a positive impact on our local creative culture. Joining me next from Milwaukee Film is Managing Director Kristen Heller with her thoughts on Donald Baumgartner as we remember him and his impact here on What's on Tap.
What's on Tap with Sandy Max is back on WTMJ.
Welcome back to What's on Tap. And it's a sad day when you lose someone who's important in your life. And we've lost someone important to the entire cultural life of not just Milwaukee, but Wisconsin. On Saturday, Donald Baumgartner passed away. And if you recognize that name, maybe you were at the Summerfest grounds and you walked by the Milwaukee Ballet Building. That's the Baumgartner Center for the Arts. Or maybe you go to any number of arts and culture, or even the Milwaukee Zoo, you will see the Baumgartner's name, because Donald and his wife, Donna, have been part of our community for decades and involved in so many different organizations that and the gift that keeps giving, because they've been visionary and truly active philanthropists, certainly writing checks and certainly making financial support possible for many different organizations, but not just that, being very involved in boards and going to the events that they plan and really being part, an enthusiastic part of our community. So I'm very honored to be able to remind all of us the impact that Donald Baumgartner has made over the past decades, but also kind of go, oh, I should appreciate that. And also hopefully inspire people to go, can I really make a difference? And you can. And so to hear, to share even more stories about the positive impact that you might not realize Donald Baumgartner has made, joining me from Milwaukee Film, Managing Director Kristen Heller. How are you, Kristen?
I'm great, Sandy. Well,
I was just going to say,
sad, but
yeah,
great to be here and to share about this legacy of life.
I'm glad. And so my condolences to you as well. I've said that to all of my guests, because yeah, Donald Baumgartner and his wife, Donna, have truly worked with every organization. And it's funny to me, Kristen, because as I said, you're a younger woman. And I guess I just feel like, you know, when we talk about these echelons of people who've made their wealth in industry and business and are retirees, and just like, oh, I don't know that you would have worked with him. And you're like, oh, gosh, yeah, ever since Milwaukee yeah. Film started. So tell me about your experience with Milwaukee Film and with Donald Baumgartner.
Sure. So my experience with Milwaukee Film is that I'm the managing director. I joined the team seasonally in 2011 and became full-time in 2013. And to give you the view of when the Baumgartners got involved, Milwaukee Film was founded in 2008, and they became members in 2010. So 2 years into us operating, they were members. And I think it was 2012, right as I was signing on to be a full-time staff member, Donna joined the board. And like you said, they were never a couple to just write a check and send it. They deeply believed in growing organizations, at being leaders at the table, being active voices. And they've been active with us ever since. And it's not just active in the boardroom, really coming to the movies, really being there, sharing in the experiences, having fun with it. He was such a fun character and wanted to enjoy all the art that he was helping to put out in the world.
And for him to see that Milwaukee Film had possibility, because it seems like Donald was such a visionary.
Oh, yes.
In identifying Santiago Calatrava would be this person, this artist who could really drastically improve our city skyline and attract people from around the world to our world-class art museum. Having that vision and then being able to develop those relationships, not only with Santiago Calatrava, but the relationships here within our own mm-hmm. community to say, oh, I see what you want to do. I want to support that in however I can.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's the thing. Donna and Donald love this city so much. They always believed that Milwaukee deserved an active, thriving arts community and deserved to be a world destination. And the fact that when you see our skyline and you see the Calatrava, and he was very active on that architecture board that brought Santiago Calatrava here, I mean, you see the impact of them. They've shaped the way our city looks, the way our city feels, the way that you can engage with the arts in our city in a really profound way that will last for generations.
What a fantastic way to describe his impact on our arts and culture community. I mean, you really summed it up right there. Now, for someone who loves going to the movies or going to the Milwaukee Film Festival, why should Donald Baumgartner's passing really matter?
Well, he believed in us from the very beginning. You have to remember, you know, we started as a young startup and we had very wonderful co-founders with Chris Abley and Bill Haberman. So we had people that believed in us from the get-go. But we were still a young startup with a few young people in their 20s and 30s.
And this was a festival that was not quite 2 weeks like it is now.
No, it was 11 days. And then we
three or four different
15 days.
Theaters.
And for years, we were just a film festival. But they always believed in us. They always wanted us to sort of, you know, because we wanted to bring the world to Milwaukee. We wanted to bring the best films in the country and in the world to Milwaukee, and they wanted to be part of that, and they believed in that. And so they were very engaged. They often sponsored our Spotlight program, which had a lot of the big, flashy, fun ones during the festival, and those brought some of our big guests that really put us on the map. And then when we took over the Oriental in 2018, the venue was falling into rough shape and was needing a lot of repair and restoration. And they stepped up in a very major way, wanting us, because we loved this movie palace and wanted to, you know, continue to want to bring great movies to Milwaukee all year round, but also to bring the theater back to life and to fix it up. And they were one of our major donors in that and really wanting to help us build that legacy, because like you said, he just wants generations of people in Milwaukee to have these wonderful things for their kids, for themselves, for anyone that visits, to sort of show how special the city really is.
And it's another architectural gem. This mm-hmm. one's historic, the Absolutely. Art museum being more futuristic with Calatrava, but mm-hmm. to show just all the different aspects of arts that Donald and his wife Donna loved and supported. Yeah. I am with Kristen Heller, Milwaukee Film Managing Director, as we continue to honor and remember Donald Baumgartner, who passed away on Saturday at the age of 95, but still active. all the way till a couple of weeks ago at the Florentine Opera Company going to the Pasta and Puccini. So we're going to talk more about Milwaukee Film and Donald Baumgartner's impact. And I think I might know what one of his favorite films is. We'll find out some more stories with Kristen Heller next on What's on Tap.
Welcome back to What's on Tap on WTMJ.
Okay, any excuse I get to play the Dr. No theme rocks my world. One of my favorite things when you walk into the Oriental Theater is just the beauty of a 1920s movie palace, beautifully restored. And Milwaukee Film's Managing Director Kristen Heller is with me. And we are remembering Donald Baumgartner, mm-hmm. who passed away on Saturday, age of 95. He and his wife, Donna, who survives him, condolences to her. Man, for what, four decades or more, have been immensely involved in a variety of cultural organizations, including Milwaukee Film. And it was a few years ago, I want to say, over the concessions, and I noticed there are these cool movie posters. And then I was like, oh, I recognize that name, and it's not a movie star. And they're donor posters
yes.
that honor many of your donors. And Donna and Donald Baumgartner are a James Bond poster, and it looks great. It's such a fun tribute and a fun way to help people who really are supporting the organization really feel like they're part of it.
Yes. So those niches, they're up high in our main lobby. And for the previous tenant of the Oriental, they had had classic movie posters. And when we moved in, we didn't know what to put there because we didn't want to put new movie posters because those would have been so out of place in a 1920 movie palace. And we didn't want to put up posters for films that we had never shown yet. So we were trying to think of like what would go there, and we had the perfect number of niches for our top level donors. And we dove into a very fun creative project where we matched a poster to the donor in a way. So, you know, Bud Selig got the baseball theme poster. Chris Avely has the sci-fi theme poster because he's kind of fun like that. And then it kind of made sense that we went like, you know, Susan and I have been talking this week. Susan's our executive director. How fitting the James Bond poster is for Donald, because one, like fun is such a big thing with him. You know, there were swanky cars, big, that was huge with him. He loved your summer blockbusters. So it was fun and active, and it just had that kind of larger than life personality that fit his joyful self. And so, you know, that was something fun for us to look at today in thinking about this and reminiscing, is that this is a little bit of the legacy that we get to keep and look at every day as people come in and get to sort of enjoy the theater that he helped thrive.
And again, weaving a donor, a supporter into the actual organization and the fun of it, not just very respectful plaque on the wall. You know, this was just a playful and
exactly.
It's, honestly, it's one of those things that I completely remember. And because I'm intimidated, lowercase I, but very respectful of mm-hmm. the major philanthropists that we have in Milwaukee and in southeastern Wisconsin. And I am not ever going to be like, hey, how are you? Thanks so much. You know, just like, even though we're all Milwaukee nice and there isn't a lot of snootiness, I just feel like there's that respect. But now I feel like I could go up to Donald Baumgartner and go, I love your James Bond poster. And then just move on. You know, just like, I'm not asking for anything. Just want to tell you that that's super fun. So it's a fun way to bridge that. And again, when we heard Maggie from the Florentine Opera Company talking about the student program that they have and having students perform, to be able to see the intention come to life when you have those long-term visions.
Exactly. And I think the fun is such an important part of it because, you know, for us, like, you know, we value our donors and, like, you know, it means a lot to put their names on things. But it's also fun to sort of tie it into what we do, which is about the cinematic experience and having those moments together, having those, you know, memorable moments that you would never have had on your couch watching Netflix, like that you had with an audience in a packed house, you know, where there was a high-speed car chase. Like, we love that, you know, that we've been able to sort of thank those donors in that way. And that, you know, as I take my daughter to the cinema for generations to come, that, you know, that will stay there. And that will be like a memory that lives on in a fun, cool way that blends in with our theater.
Yeah. And what, in your interaction, how often did you wind up, as I just told you, I was like, oh, I'd be a little intimidated. How often did you wind up working closely with Donald and Donna?
Fairly often, especially at the festival, because they were active moviegoers. And so, you know, they would pull up in front with in their car. I feel like you could always see Donald with sunglasses, you know, kind of had a very suave demeanor to him. But they were they're so down to earth. And they're like, you know, would always give hugs, always be gracious, always be so glad to see us. And, you know, they came and saw a movie this year. Like, you know, like they were active all throughout. And, you know, like, it's hard because you never know when it's the last time you're going to see someone. But now looking back, that feels so special that we get to have at least like that last festival with him.
Indeed. We are chatting with Kristen Heller, Milwaukee Film's managing director, as we remember Donald Baumgartner, who has made such an impact on so many different organizations. And we'll talk more about his legacy. And we welcome your memories as well on the Sighting Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line 855-616-1620. If you have a thank you or a memory of Donald Baumgartner that you would like to share from his philanthropy throughout the arts community here, stay with us on What's on Tap.
You're listening to What's on Tap with Sandy Max on WTMJ.
Welcome back to What's on Tap, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee. Handcrafted, homegrown, world-class. Discover more at visitmilwaukee.org. And today, we learned that over the weekend, Donald Baumgartner passed away. He is a visionary. I just did it myself. Was a visionary major philanthropist here in southeastern Wisconsin for decades, along with his wife, Donna Baumgartner. And some people say, how do you get to be a philanthropist? I like to be that. He was a business owner. And Kristen, tell us what you know about how he started in business.
Sure. So he founded Paper Machinery Corp in 1951. And, you know, it started as a local operation and he grew it to a global production with many patents. And basically they create the machinery and sell the machinery, but also manufacture paper cups and paper containers. So, you know, if you've been to McDonald's and had a soda, like you've touched something that he was a part of, you know, it's a huge company. And, you know, we were talking about, you know, like what makes him, you know, like that makes someone, you know, that's one that, like, you know, thinks big and aims high. But, you know, if you want to think about, like, who he is at heart, you know, we talked about, you mentioned earlier what he did with the company when he was ready to retire. So, like, 10 years ago, when he was 85, wanted to step back, you know, there was the question of, like, what was going to happen with ownership of the company. And, you know, he could have sold to an investment firm. He could have sold to something out of state. And I'm sure there was pressure for it. But he didn't. What he chose to do was he chose to do an employee stock ownership plan, basically turning over the company to the 250 employees that ran it.
Which is a lot different than taking a multi-million dollar
or more payout. Yeah. No, absolutely. And you know, like it was, you know, I think that says so much about him because, you know, when he talked about it at the time in that his father was also a brilliant entrepreneur and he had three different companies that he sold, and Donald watched every single one of those companies leave Milwaukee, and he didn't want that. And so in a way, like he was determined that, like, no, this is going to stay in Milwaukee, and this is for the people that built it. And so, you know, I think that shows so much about his profound loyalty, his deep humility, and like basically, and that generous heart that loved this city, you know, and this community, and like wanted that legacy to stay here, those jobs to stay here, and for like that business to continue to thrive here.
And again, paying it forward, helping that next generation.
Yeah.
That genuinely.
Yes.
Doesn't have his name on it. Here, this is what I'm giving to you. Now you carry on.
Exactly.
That's fascinating. And also when you mentioned Bud Selig being one of the Milwaukee film donors that's on the posters, mm-hmm. the fun-loving posters inside the lobby of the Oriental Theater. And I'm immediately, when you said he wanted it to be Milwaukee, he wanted to stay in Milwaukee,
yes.
I'm reminded of Bob Uecker.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which was such an essential part of his career. Like, no matter how big he got, no matter how much success he enjoyed in entertainment and baseball, he was here in Milwaukee. And there you go, the documentary world premiere at the Milwaukee Film Festival.
Absolutely.
So just interesting, these contemporaries.
Yeah, we are very lucky that we've had these incredible legends with huge hearts that have loved the city as much as we do. You know, and have wanted to be part of it. And yeah, their legacies will live on because of that.
We are remembering local philanthropist. Try that. Local philanthropist, Donald Baumgartner. He would have a laugh. Hopefully he's laughing.
He would enjoy us fumbling our words. But that was like he was always good for a laugh that way.
I was like, yeah, at least he had a good sense of humor. So yes. I'm not being disrespectful. Local philanthropist Donald Baumgartner passed away over the weekend, left an amazing impact. And we're reflecting on some of that and welcoming your memories as well. Milwaukee Film Managing Director Kristen Heller is with me. We'll have some more memories of Donald Baumgartner next on What's on Tap.
This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max.
A wife, a son,
and then what?
We won the war. Help me go home.
That is some of the trailer for The Odyssey, one of the biggest movies of the summertime. Milwaukee Film Managing Director Kristen Heller is with me. Are you going to see The Odyssey?
Oh, absolutely. We're showing it on something. This is, and I'm glad that you showed that you had that clip, because this is the exact movie that Donald would go. This, like, that big Hollywood blockbuster, like big colorful action, lots of Hollywood stars. He would have been all over this.
And, I was going to tell you, we've been talking about Donald Baumgartner, who is the visionary philanthropist here in Milwaukee, based in Milwaukee, but had an impact all across the state and beyond the state, with his relationship with Santiago Calatrava from Spain and making sure that the Milwaukee Art Museum got the, I'll say, revolutionary new wing that we still enjoy with the Burke Brise de Soleil wings. But so to know that he lived large saw large and brought large here as well, and is keeping the big things going with all sorts of programs to encourage new talent, encourage more philanthropy. It's inspiring. And I love that you think that, I was going to ask you if you thought he'd go large with The Odyssey.
Absolutely. That would definitely have been one of his picks. And I think that's the very cool thing about him and Donna, is that they gave to the arts for many reasons, but one of the reasons was that they gave to things that they loved. They gave to things that they enjoyed and they wanted to go out and do. And so, you know, like one of the endearing things that he would always tell us is that he loves our popcorn.
The Odyssey is a popcorn movie.
It is a popcorn movie. And he always was like, you guys have the best popcorn in town. And he always like complimented the fact that we have real butter. And it just shows that, like, you know, like he was such a passionate person about the movie going experience, just as he was for the, like, you know, the opera going experience. Like, his heart was in all of it. And he deeply, like, I think that's why he wanted all of us to be able to like grow and thrive. It wasn't just that he should and Milwaukee should have this. It was, these are good organizations that like he can help make strong. He can help us learn how to grow so that we through our missions that we provide these entertaining experiences to audiences, and that, you know, we can all sort of have that shared experience together.
And I feel like his vision, his passion, and his enthusiasm was contagious.
Absolutely.
You can't do it by yourself.
No.
And that gregarious, great sense of humor, inclusive, like, hey, come along with me on my big adventure.
Absolutely.
Was magnetic.
And he's leaving behind the legacy of these beautiful venues throughout the city where you can go, like, anyone that is listening to this can go out and support the arts by buying a movie ticket, going to see the Florentine, you know, checking out the new art exhibit. Like, just by, you know, we might not all have millions of dollars to give, but just by going out and enjoying the arts and being part of that experience and sharing with audiences and laughing together and having these moments, like, that's how you support us and continue his legacy on. You know, that's how we will continue to thrive as arts in Milwaukee.
I feel like we are talking about a man who embraced life.
Yes.
And encouraged everyone to embrace life, and especially their creativity.
Absolutely.
She is Kristen Heller, Milwaukee Film Managing Director. Thank you for spending time and helping us get to know Donald Baumgartner even better and appreciate not just his legacy, but his spirit that I know will continue to live on.
Thank you for having me. He was so special and will be so missed, but you'll see the memory of him everywhere.
My condolences to you and the rest of the Milwaukee film team, and thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
We are What's on Tap. Stay with us to find out what's on tap for tomorrow.
What's on Tap with Sandy Max is back on WTMJ.
I'm Sandy Max. Thank you so much for spending time with me on this supersized and special episode of What's on Tap, as we did a lot of memories and reflecting on Donald Baumgartner, businessman, philanthropist who had such a huge impact on Milwaukee over the decades. He passed away at age 95 on Saturday, and I'm very grateful to all of my guests who spent time with me sharing stories that maybe we really didn't know. We know some of the impact of Donald Baumgartner and his wife, Donna, and their philanthropy, but also stories that we didn't know. So thank you to Milwaukee Art Museum Board Chair Andy Nunnemaker, also to Florentine Opera Company General Director and CEO Maggie Opplinger, and Milwaukee Film Managing Director Kristen Heller. Thanks to each of them who were able to make time to come in and join me this evening. I will still bring you more stories from other people and organizations who have had the benefit and the joy of working with Donald Baumgartner to expand their offerings, to sometimes expand their buildings. But what an impact, a positive impact Donald Baumgartner has made. And there's a very good article that Mary Spicuzza wrote in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And at the very end of that article, there will be a celebration of life September 8th at the Milwaukee Art Museum in memory of Donald Baumgartner, who, if we've learned anything tonight, had a big sense of humor, was very gregarious, and lived large and embraced life. So that in itself is a wonderful legacy in addition to all of his work in the arts. And if you want to catch up on any of those conversations, you can catch up on the podcast in very shortly. It will be posted tonight on What's on Tap, and you can subscribe to the What's on Tap podcast so you don't miss out on any of our coverage. But again, I'm very grateful to be in this chair tonight and have this opportunity to celebrate the life of Donald Baumgartner and also share your memories as well. Tomorrow night, we will give you a preview of Gallery Night MKE. It's the summer edition in the Third Ward on the east side and downtown. That will be Friday and Saturday. You'll have more chances to win Bailey Zimmerman tickets as well. So I'm excited to be hanging out with you tonight and also tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday here on What's on Tap. So thank you for hanging out, and stay cool in this hot weather. Turn on the fan and enjoy. And like I said, catch up on the What's on Tap podcast anytime at WTMJ.com and wherever you get your podcasts. And as ever, on a sad day when someone passes away, hug your loved ones closer and tell them what you mean to them, or tell them what they mean to you. Or you can tell, or maybe you've got high self-esteem. You'll tell them what you mean to you. Thanks so much for listening to What's on Tap. I'll meet you here tomorrow at 6. It is What's on Tap, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee.